Well, we've been in the book of Hebrews and have been in chapter 11 of that book for the last few weeks. Last week we looked at the patriarchs. We looked at Abraham and Isaac and Jacob along with Sarah, who's Abraham's wife. And we looked at them all receiving the promises of God, of what God was going to do ultimately with them, since the promises of God and Abraham would also include Abraham and his children. So the promises that God gave to Abraham extended on to Isaac and Jacob as well. And we saw that even though they all were given God's promises of the descendants growing into a great nation, and that the land of Canaan would be theirs, but they each did not see the total fulfillment of what God promised, but they each did see a piece of it happen. And with each one, Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob, they each saw more and more of the promises fulfilled than their predecessor did. Abraham and Sarah saw the birth of a son that they could not have at first. Abraham saw Isaac take a wife. Isaac and his wife couldn't have children at first either. But as with Abraham, God made that possible. And Isaac saw his son Jacob have wives and children. Jacob would see his 12 sons develop families as well as move to Egypt, where those families grew and flourished over 400 years to become a tremendous number that would even give the nation of Egypt cause to be nervous. But none of them saw the exodus from Egypt to the land of promise that happened with Moses, nor the taking of that land with Joshua. But God did everything that he said that he would do. God keeps his promises. We also saw that these patriarchs stepped out in faith, that you know, there were things that they did to see those promises filled, but they had to step out and they had to take risks and they had to trust in God as well as call upon God for help. And God met their needs to see his promises fulfilled. And when God promises us something, it will happen, but there will be challenges along the way. As we saw with these people that we looked at, you know, making life changes, moving to a new land, facing setbacks, wives not being able to have children. Then there was the famine. And God helping them as each challenge arose. Because there will be challenges. God allows challenges so that we have to come to him. So that we have to depend on him and trust him. So he can show himself to us. And we can grow in our relationship with him through those experiences as we lean on him. See, the promise is a vehicle to walk with God and grow in our relationship and faith in him. And some of these things that they did to further the fulfillment of that promise were not conscious. They weren't conscious thoughts that they deliberately thought out. But God was in those things and used them. But also there is that God may do things with us that we don't want. And God may do things that we don't like. And we may even run from those things. We may fight those things. But no matter how hard we try, we cannot escape his plans for us that are actually better than the ones that we had planned. And eventually we see that what he is doing or has done with us is really what we've wanted all along. And we didn't see it. And we saw that to step into seeing the fulfillment of God's promise will sometimes mean having to let go of what we've been holding on to. To embrace and do that so that we can embrace our future with him. See, God is always on the move. But there are times when God moves from where we were with him to positioning himself in front of us to lead us into the fulfillment of the promise. And we had to step out of what was, because even though God was there before, he's not there now. Now he is in front of us and he's no longer where we were. And we now have to move from where we were with him to step out into him now in front of us so that we can step into the promise. And all of this requires faith, which is Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 and 2 says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it the men of old gained approval." Faith assures us. It's a confidence. It's a certainty without any doubts of what we are waiting for, with an expectation of it actually happening. It's a conviction. It's a knowing. It's being positive that what we have been praying for and have been actually told and promised by God is coming and will happen. And this brings us to where we are today in the book of Hebrews. Chapter 11, verse 17. "By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, 'In Isaac your descendants shall be called.' He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, for which he also received him back as a type." Promises are tested. We will face challenges. And these tests, these challenges, I said, make it to where we have to depend on God. We have to go to him because he wants to show himself to us to grow us in our relationship with him. Tests cause us to exercise our faith. And when we face a test, we have to lean on that faith, that confidence in God and his word that we have. And that's how faith grows. Genesis chapter 22, verse 2 says this, "And he said, 'Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you.'" So Isaac was the son that was miraculously born to Abraham and Sarah. Isaac was the first sign of the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham of him being the father of a nation. And here God instructs Abraham now, after he has had this miracle son, he says, now, to offer your son up as a burnt offering. What's up with that? Human sacrifice was something that God abhorred. It was a practice that the people of the land that Abraham was in did, and would seem like a contradiction to God's ways, and yet God instructs Abraham to do this. Now notice here that just as when God told Abraham to leave his home to go to a land that he would show him, thus requiring Abraham to step out in faith into the unknown, in that he did not know where he was going ahead of time. God would show him after he stepped out in faith. And here we see this same kind of thing. Before it was give up the security and the safety and familiarity of the home that you have had and step out into the unknown. And here it sacrificed the object, the fulfillment of the promise made on which he stepped out in the first place, and do it at a location that God would show him. And it says in Hebrews 11:17 that by faith God tested Abraham. God had faith. And God had a confident expectation in Abraham. Because God knew Abraham. And Abraham had a confidence and a surety and an expectation of God. And God knew Abraham and what he would do. And Abraham trusted God. In the face of what did not make sense, Abraham trusted God. And that's all that he had, was just that trust in him. How many of us are or have found yourselves in places like that? How many of us are in that place right now to where all you have is your trust in God? Things don't make sense right now. You can't see all the way down the road. But all you have is that trust in God. As I said, we are in a time of faith and trusting. So they're on their way to this to do this sacrifice. And along the way, Isaac asks Abraham this question. It's in Genesis 22, verse 7. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." And he said, "Behold, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." See, Isaac sees the items needed for a burnt sacrifice, except for one very important thing, the actual sacrifice. But look at Abraham's response. God will provide. Again, Hebrews 11, 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it is said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, for which he also received him back as a type. So going back to Genesis 22 in this story, as things progress on, things get kind of intense. We're now at the point where Abraham is standing over his son with a knife in his hand. And it says, Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." And he said, "Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, "In the mount of the Lord it will be provided." So God provided. Now let's go back again to Hebrews 11, verse 19. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Isaac being put on the altar to be sacrificed and then spared at the last minute, and another sacrifice provided, is a picture of Jesus. God sacrificing his son as Isaac is being offered up, but also God sent another sacrifice in Isaac's place, just as Jesus was our sacrifice. So Isaac's situation is a type, as it says in verse 19, of what Jesus did. And Isaac's being spared from death was also a type of being raised from the dead as well, to life from death, because of the sacrifice of a different kind that was provided by God. Just as God sent his son to die for us instead of us dying. Again, the writer of Hebrews is putting in a reference to Christ here, to those he's writing to, because some of them had walked away from Jesus. So, in this example of Abraham, what God asked Abraham was to put the fulfillment of God's promise to him on the altar, to kill that which was the promise of what was going to be fulfilled before it happened. You get that? Didn't tell him to put him on the altar after the fulfillment, but before. Abraham had made changes in his life. He had moved his home to another land based on God's direction and promise. And now God was messing with the fulfillment of the promise after Abraham had committed himself. You ever felt like that? But you know, Isaac was not the first fulfillment of God's promise. God also told Abraham back in Genesis 12, 2, he says this, "And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing." By the time of Isaac, Abraham was a great and powerful man in the land. God had already fulfilled some of the promises even before Isaac. But how many of us have seen God come through before and we either don't see it in our current situation or we forgot about what he has already done before, and so when God does something, and something that we don't expect or we don't understand or we don't like, and we wonder where God is now when he has already been working and he's already been moving? Or do we remember what he has done and remain faithful and unwavering in challenging times? Y'all with me? You're kind of quiet. So Genesis 22, verse 9. Then they came to the place of which God had told them, and Abraham built the altar, and there and arranged the wood, and bound his son Isaac, and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Now for Isaac, notice something here. There was no sign of struggle with Isaac. His father binds him, places him on the altar, and at this point, I would kind of think that Isaac might be starting to get an idea of kind of what's coming. You know? And if he doesn't, I would think he certainly would when daddy pulls out that knife and starts to hold it over him. But there's not a word from Isaac. He appears to just go along with this. You know, is he also trusting God? You know, is he also trusting his father? At this point, his life is literally in his father's hands. But his life is also in God's hands. So for Abraham here, it's kill the provision of the promise. Or God is going to have to do something. As with Isaac. For Isaac, it's I'm going to die right here. Or God is going to have to do something. So what about us? These stories were passed down from generation to generation. Isaac knew about the God of his father. I mean, going back to verse 14 of Genesis 22, when Abraham told Isaac, the Lord will provide the sacrifice. Isaac was the partial fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. This experience didn't just test and strengthen Abraham's faith, but it also tested and strengthened the faith of Isaac as well. He, like Abraham, had it all on the line with God. But unlike Abraham, he wasn't given a choice. See, Abraham had to choose to trust God in terms of physically stepping out. Isaac didn't have a choice. He was put on that altar. But even though he was put on that altar, he inside chose to trust God. See, your outside situation does not dictate what you do inwardly. It doesn't have to. These stories and events, they don't just strengthen and encourage Abraham and Isaac, but these stories are for us too. When these events were unfolding, our God, who is eternal and beyond time, took these people through these things and had them recorded for us as well thousands of years later. You know, they went through these things for them and for those times back then, but they went through them for us today too. That is why we have this. Now, at the time that I was putting this together, and I was fielding texts and emails from people and trying to work with various needs and so forth, and everything that's been going on has been on my mind, all that's been happening of late with all the falls that people have taken and all the things going on with people and the needs that people have and the health issues going on. And with all of this, it hit me that God led me to do this series in Hebrews, which started all the way back in January on the 22nd, way before all the things that are happening now were happening. And as I was working on this week's message and in thinking about what is going on with everybody right now and what some of us are facing right now, the message today is where some of you are right now. And we just happen to be in these passages right now. We're going through a book, and it's a book that I didn't choose to pick it. I felt directed by God to do it. And at the time he told me to start it, that was his choosing. And so as we just naturally, or God-led, move through this book, it brings us to where we are right now that speaks to where we are right now. Is God not good? All the time. Oh, there they are. Now you're awake. Okay. Now I'll tell you, pastoring is hard. Pastoring is hard. I love it, but it's not easy. Now, I have meetings that I do with other pastors. And they are also going through hard times too. As I met with some of them this week, everyone is going through stuff right now. They are, we are, we're all going through stuff right now. We're all in Isaac and Abraham situations right now, facing a lot of things and wondering what is God doing right now. Life has gone through changes for some, with some even looking at issues of life and death. The immediate future is full of uncertainty and unknowns. And so when I met with those other pastors this week, and when I meet with them normally, we get together to encourage one another. But this time is something that has touched so many. And the great thing about meeting with these other guys is that what we do in meeting with one another is we minister to one another. And I'll tell you, no one can minister to another pastor like another pastor. Because of what we go through and what we're called upon to do. And because of that, we face things and have to do things that are unique to some other people because of our role and what we're called to do and carry. And we too, as I said, we are in Abraham and Isaac moments right now. For you here today, for you watching this on Facebook, many of you are in Abraham and Isaac moments right now. And you're in those kind of situations right now. In fact, as I was thinking what to title this message, because of all this, I considered the title to be Blind Faith, Community of Grace on the Altar. my other title was Blind Faith, You on the Altar. Because this is where some of us are right now. And the thing about it is we make this house up. And there are words and promises that you're all claiming right now. But there are challenges. There's injuries. There's illnesses. There's problems at home or with your home and family. Not sure of what's going on. Wondering what God is going to do. Having to trust God and have faith that God will provide and that God will make a way. If He does, that's great. Problem solved. If He doesn't, oh, goodness, death, disaster, disappointment, sadness, questions, confusion. But Abraham and Isaac faithfully submitted and moved forward, trusting, yet submitting as things move forward, trusting God, but wondering how He will do what He's going to do. Same with me, same with my pastor friends, same with you. We all have to have faith, and we all have to trust in God right now. Hebrews 11, verse 20. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. So years later, when Isaac had married and gotten old, and his eyesight was poor. His youngest son, Jacob, wanted his brother Esau's blessing. And as I said last week, the blessing was a prophetic declaration of what God was going to do with the one being blessed. The firstborn would be blessed first. And many times receiving a word of favor and goodness because it was a prophetic declaration. It could not be taken back or undone. It was a God-ordained word to that person. Now, the firstborn was usually got the first and the best of everything. That's the way things rolled in the families back then. The birthright meant headship of the household and double the inheritance of the estate, more so than all the younger siblings. So Jacob and his mother devised a scheme to trick Isaac into thinking that Jacob was Esau, so he would get Esau's blessing. He had already bought Esau's birthright from him because Esau did not value the birthright that he had. Esau was impulsive and would act without really thinking things through. And so in a moment of hunger, he gave his brother his birthright for some food. So this story, as with the patriarch, shows the humanness of these families in that they all had family problems and they made mistakes. So when Isaac plans to bless Esau, he'd not shown any plans to bless Jacob after that. This blessing of Esau seemed to be a private arrangement between the two of them. So he was going to exclude his younger son, Jacob. But Rebekah, as I said, schemes with Jacob against Isaac and Esau, which suggests a division in the family with people taking sides and showing favoritism as well as one side scheming against the other. I mean, to coin a phrase, where's the love here? You know, this is a patriarch family. So there were secrets and there's deception going on. So later when Isaac blesses his sons, he speaks over them what God gave him. It's like a prophecy. Stepping out in faith with what we receive from the Lord and speak those words over his sons. The thing is that even though Isaac thought he was speaking over Esau, he was actually speaking over Jacob. Genesis 22:27. So he came close and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his garment. So Jacob had put on something of his brother so he would smell like Esau. And his mother had also put goat skin on Jacob's arms and on the back of his neck so that he was hairy like Esau apparently was. And as well as bringing his father food that his mother had made that his father was expecting from Esau. So once fooled, Isaac steps out with what he thought he was speaking over Esau. He steps out in faith, believing what he was doing, but the words he spoke were from God, and God knew. But this was also a declaration spoken over Jacob, a prayer for God to do this, and Isaac believed that God would do what he spoke. So go into verse 27, or continue in verse 27. It says, and he blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord had blessed. Now may God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and an abundance of grain and new wine. May people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master of your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be those who curse you, and blessed be those who bless you. And when the boys grew up, as it says in Genesis 25, verse 27, when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. So as I said, Esau was the firstborn and had a stronger relationship with Isaac than Jacob did, who was more of an indoor person. He was more of a homebody. He stuck close to his mother, and they were close to each other, with him staying indoors more often. But you hear this declaration that I just read that is being spoken over Jacob, that Isaac thinks he's speaking over Esau, and it doesn't seem to fit Jacob, who's a homebody. But Jacob would end up after this running away to his uncle's house to escape being killed by Esau for taking his birthright and his blessing. And he became a person of the field. He tended his uncle's livestock. He would end up becoming wealthy in livestock, as well as having 12 sons that would become the 12 tribes of Israel. But let me also point something else out to you. And again, this is going back to Genesis 25. This is verse 21 through 26. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. Again, just like Abraham with Sarah, Isaac's wife was barren at first. And the Lord answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her. And she said, "If it is so, why then am I this way?" So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body, and one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." That goes against culture. When her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. Now the first came forth red all over like a hairy garment, and they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came forth with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 60 years old when she gave birth to them. So the Lord said that two nations were birthing here. One will be stronger. The older will serve the younger. Esau was to serve Jacob. The blessing given to Jacob actually belonged to Jacob already. These two were wrestling at birth. Isaac bonded with Esau. He wanted Esau to have the blessing, but Rebekah was told by God at the boy's birth that Jacob would rule over Esau. And so even though you have deception upon deception here, Rebekah was also looking after Jacob and making sure that he got what God said at birth. And once Isaac and Esau realized that they had been tricked, Esau pleads for his blessing. Genesis 27:39. Then Isaac his father answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fertility of the earth shall be your dwelling, and away from the dew of heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and your brother you shall serve. But it shall come about when you become restless that you will break his yoke from your neck." So Esau saw these blessings. He saw them kind of like gifts in a sack. You reach in and give one, and then he says, "Hey, well, what about mine? Well, let me just reach in the sack and give you one." It doesn't work like that. But Isaac tells him this. When he says, "Don't you have something for me, Dad?" This is Genesis 22:33. Then Isaac trembled violently, and he said, "Who was he then that hunted game and brought it to me so that I ate of it before you came and blessed him? Yes, he shall be blessed." When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." And he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing." Then he said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times." Supplanter means taking the place of another through either force or through scheming or strategy. It's a type of an offense or a wrong and is a transgression of law. He does this twice. Steals his birthright and steals his blessing. He goes on to say in verse 36 here of the same chapter, Genesis 27, he says, "He took away my birthright, and behold, now he's taken away my blessing." And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" But Isaac replied to Esau, "Behold, I have made him your master, and all his relatives I have given to him as servants. And with grain and new wine I have sustained him. Now as for you then, what can I do, my son?" Isaac's words did not really change Esau's future, because God had spoken this to Rebekah at the boy's birth. Isaac's blessing to Esau confirms it. In the end here, Isaac goes from being deceived and thinking he's blessing the son he wanted to being obedient and giving the word he gets to who it is supposed to go to. Esau would eventually be known as Edom and was the ancestor to the Edomites. The land of Edom included mountain ranges as well as desert valley. And even though Jacob and Esau would resolve their differences years later, the Edomites would become enemies of Israel, which is what God would change Jacob's name to. He would change his name to Israel. Esau would eventually take Hittite wives that would make things miserable for Isaac and Rebekah. So, what do we take away from this story and how it applies to Hebrews chapter 11, verse 20, which again, which I read earlier, which says, "By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come." Well, Isaac and Rebekah had faith in God. They had faith in blessings given. So much so that when they developed their favorites, you know, Isaac with Esau and Rebekah with Jacob, they wanted to make sure that they were blessed because of their faith in the Word. Even if they didn't like the outcome as with Isaac and Esau. But with Esau, Isaac had faith. And he blessed without seeing it. But he believed so much so that, as did Rebekah, that they went to certain lengths to make sure that their favorite got the blessing. And it pained Isaac to give Esau his blessing because he knew it was from God, but he didn't like it because it was not what he wanted, but he had to give what God gave him. There was this much of a belief, there was this much of a faith in the Word, this much of a faith in God. So the question is, do you have faith in the words of God? Do you believe in the promises in Scripture? Do you believe in the spoken words of God given over you? Abraham believed, and he had faith, just as Isaac did. What has God said to you that you're waiting for? Is your faith in God and His Word strong enough that you will step out into what is unknown, that you don't understand, and obey and stand on that Word because of your faith in God who said it? And will you believe and receive and trust in a Word that you don't like and be obedient in it just because God said it? Let's pray. God, I thank You that You are a God that we can trust, which You say. You are faithful, You are trustworthy. When You say something, we can believe it, we can trust it. Even if we don't see the total fulfillment of it yet, we will. Eventually we will. Because You're not just a God that keeps His promises, but You're a God that works in and outside of time. It's not just, for You, it's not just fulfilling the promise. It's when and how You fulfill it for the best for us and what Your plans and purposes are, which are always good. God, I pray that You would just help us to be people that just trust, even when we don't see it all right away. That we would believe, that we would stand on Your Word, Lord. That You would just give each of us a fresh infusion of faith to trust in You, irregardless of what we see, irregardless of our circumstances, to be able to trust in You, to have faith in You and Your Word, and to stand on that. And Lord, I just come against the enemy who would seek to bring doubt, that would seek to bring confusion. And I pray, Lord, that we would so stand on that faith that we would also stand against the thoughts in our own minds and our own flesh where we fear and we doubt. That we would so stand on your word to not waver and to be true all the way through to seeing the fulfillment of what you said. God, I thank you that we can trust you, that we can stand on you always. With you, there is no risk in standing on you. It may seem like that sometimes, but you are the safest thing to stand on. I was going to say you're the safest bet, but when we bet on you, it's really not a gamble because we'll always win with you because of who you are. And we thank you for that. And we just give you glory. We just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Again, let me just remind you before we sign off here that next week, this part of the service will not be on Facebook. The Bible study will at 9 o'clock, but this will not. But this will resume on Facebook the first week in June. So God bless you, and God bless you on Facebook. And for those of you here, God bless you, and keep standing. Stay faithful. Stay trusting. God is faithful. If you need prayer, I'll be over here. God bless you.